It really is the cutting edge of what's happening in the world. It'll be shaping absolutely everything, and AI will be so synonymous with any technology. You know, anything will involve machine learning at some point. It's just like saying something is on the cloud these days.
Hello, and welcome to this latest episode of the Digital Culture Change Podcast, where the aim is to understand how digital technology affects real business change. In this episode, I interview Victoria Albrecht, Managing Director of Springbok AI, a machine learning company. We had an enjoyable discussion talking about leadership, being honest with clients to correctly manage expectations, voice technology, and of course, machine learning. Please do comment, like, or share with your friends. And actually, why don't you subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on? Please enjoy this latest episode of the Digital Culture Change Podcast.
Hello, good afternoon, Victoria. How are you doing?
Hi, Larry. Great, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. So welcome to the Digital Culture Change Podcast. Thanks for your time. It's been a few months since I've been handing you to appear on the show. But I appreciate your time. I know you're really busy. Welcome. And could you just give the listeners and viewers a view about who you are, your background, and what you do at the moment, for starters?
Sure, of course. First of all, thank you for having me on your podcast.
No problem.
We met at the chatbot meetup.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, where I was speaking. My name is Victoria Albrecht. I'm originally from Germany. The American accent is a bit deceiving. Went to international school, hence haven't been able to shake it off since
then. Okay.
I went to university in Scotland, and my academic background is in psychology. Springbok AI is my second company. Before that, I ran a data and insights company in the food industry, which I exited from about 2.5 years ago now. Then sort of diagonally moved into the field of AI, first through conversational AI. So that's basically chatbot infrastructure for enterprise clients and developers. And then took one of the clients with me, Henkel, who is now still with us, a large German manufacturer, and started Springbok AI. We are a machine learning consultancy, machine learning data science. And what we love to do is focus on solving hard problems. And we do that by essentially applying a huge amount of specific expertise, people that have PhDs and are postdocs at university, essentially who have one foot in the door in academia and one foot in the door in Springbok, and apply them to solve difficult challenges. And that ranges from doing a feasibility assessment of whether a problem is possible to solve, or whether it is possible to kind of build a software that actually automates something or gives you a certain type of result, all the way through to actually then developing and implementing that software. And depending on where organizations that we work with are at that point of time where we sort of pick up with them, we might be starting from the feasibility or moving right into the software development. But by the nature of things that we work, you know, specialized in machine learning, we usually do some feasibility and some development.
Okay, that's just really helpful. So it'd be good to come back to some of that, dig into that, some of that detail in a moment. But so how did you go from psychology to machine learning and AI and being an entrepreneur?
I think the UK has a really great system of, or a really great mindset of thinking about university and education and academia and the applications of that. So it's very different in Germany, actually. In Germany, it's much more of a vocational system. So you study something and it's assumed that you will then be working in that field. So
yeah,
I'll give you an example. My first job in Germany was with Rolls-Royce. I had at the time been studying management, and another subject was French. They had assumed that I'd want to be working in HR in a French environment. So it was really specific, right? Like, why would I be in an organization if that's what I've studied? Well, it must be that I want to be in HR because my background is in psychology. So it's like sort of very cookie cutter box thinking. Whereas in the UK, people see it much more as transferable skills. So learning how to think analytically, how to take a scientific, data-driven approach, how to work with people, how to work with unknown circumstances. And I think I was very lucky at university that I found my degree to be relatively easy in terms of the workload that I needed to apply in order to get the grades that I wanted to get. And so I ended up doing a load of things outside of university. So, you know, extracurriculars, if you so will, and ended up managing big projects and events and teams. And I think that's where I understood that I really love building something from scratch and leading a team and setting a vision and doing something new. And also that I really enjoy working for myself. And so I left university knowing that I wanted to do something entrepreneurial at some point. I didn't think I would start a company immediately, but I kind of did because I fell into an opportunity. Ended up building this company called Y-Food, which is still around, that I left to kind of then go into machine learning and data science fields. But yeah, essentially I kind of went into the AI space because I had a really strict non-compete for my exit. That's originally what happened. And you know, in all honesty, I wasn't sure how I was going to like the AI space, but I really love it. It's so great because it really is the cutting edge of what's happening in the world. It'll be shaping absolutely everything, and AI will be so synonymous with any technology. You know, anything will involve machine learning at some point. It's just like saying something is on the cloud these days, you know, software, everything is on the cloud. Yeah. So I think what I love is being close to really, really smart people and working on really interesting challenges, and also the variety that the nature of my work and our work at SpringBok gives us.
Okay, so again, we'll go to the technology in a little bit, but what about, and the application of it, but what about let's talk about your leadership. So I'm very keen to always, when I interview people, kind of understand who they are. What have people, your family, when did they notice that you were a leader?
Okay, that's a great, really good question. So I think one of the first instances of it that I remember in terms of it being noticed by other people was when my school, so the school in Germany that I went to, selected me to, I think we were maybe 9 years, I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, and it selected me to represent our entire year at these sort of school, inter-school events that they had with other schools across the region. So basically it would be like the 6 schools in the city, like in the city that we grew up in, would all get together and like discuss certain topics and like sort of look at how they can make the schools work together better. And anyways, so completely out of the blue, I was selected for that. And they were like, we think you'd be great. Like, you have great leadership skills. Then there were these leadership weekends that they invited people to, and I was invited to them at school. Like, it was things like that where I noticed because other people put me in those positions. And I think, you know, there's a really self-fulfilling cycle there because, of course, if you put someone in a position of responsibility, they will also take responsibility. And I really saw the power in that. And I had someone else, like completely independently, as a joke a few years ago, tell me, you know, Victoria, you'll be surprised how much people's IQ go up when you give them more responsibility. I'm not sure about the IQ itself, but I do believe that, you know, people just end up, being a little bit more thoughtful about their decisions and the impact that they'll have. Taking responsibility for things.
Rising to the challenge, I try to use a little bit of insight in this interview, and I knew it was something that you would be able to answer because you are a leader. And and the reason we met was because, yes, I went to the chatbots and AI meetup in London, and I think it was near Moorgate, and you were giving a talk. And what I liked about the talk was you were talking about the technology, yes, but you were talking about lessons learned from interacting with your clients on the people side, and you know, making sure that they understood what you were doing, keeping them updated. What are sort of some of the lessons that you've learned over the years of client work, making sure they understand what you're doing, managing any sort of comms or resistance in order to effectively deliver outcomes for people?
Sure. So that's a broad question. I'll try to answer as best as I can, but please steer me in the right direction.
That's all right.
So I think the key to delivering something that the client is happy with at the end of the day, and working successfully with them, is understanding what their needs are. So the deeper you can really understand where someone is coming from, so, and there's several levels to this as well, but the deeper you can understand this, the better, and the more nuanced you really get to the bottom of it. So there's obviously what the client wants to achieve in terms of the KPIs that they need to hit, the overall strategy of the company that it needs to fit into. They want to like look good in front of their boss and, you know, have a good project to show. You know, that's sort of more on the surface level. But then also they want some personal development out of it. Usually they want to get a really cool experience. Some of them also want to work with a startup or a small company. Some of them are doing it specifically because they've just joined and they want to make a mark. That's really common. They've just gotten a promotion and they need to show that they're worthy of the promotion and, you know, are basically someone who's like jumping up the ladder and will be sort of in higher leadership position soon. So it's really worth understanding not only what does that person want to achieve for the company, but also what does that person want to achieve personally. And once you understand those two, I think everything else really falls into place. Of course, there's some really important, crucial bits to do around timelines and then managing expectations. Something that we've found to be extremely helpful in working with clients is to look at the data before we commit to any specific timelines on projects. And we've actually found that most of our competitors don't do that, especially the large companies. Just don't really care enough, it seems, which is really unfortunate because it means that oftentimes a project will get kind of, you know, sort of 6 weeks into an 8-week project, and then the client realizes that actually what's been built isn't what they expected, and a lot of that's due to the data not having been in place properly. You know, expectations just hadn't been aligned. And that can really be avoided, and that's something that we could take great pride in, making sure that we promise to deliver what is actually possible, as opposed to just saying what the client wants to hear. For example, to let users do XYZ as part of this project, but you know, we're not the app experts here. I think you should get somebody in who's an expert at that. And I think just being really open and transparent about that also builds trust.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting going back to the people side of things. I can see where the psychology degree came in useful there with it sounds a bit like hierarchy of needs. Was it Maslow's hierarchy of needs? You know, it's going straight back to that, which never changes, you know, if you believe in that theory. But that's really helpful. So in terms of the technology, what sorts of problems are your clients asking you to solve, or they're approaching you to solve? Broad question.
Broad question, yes, and my mind is running, thinking, where can I talk about it, and where?
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, let me think. Okay, so one project that I think we can talk about, because I'm pretty sure it's somewhere out there in the press.
Yeah.
Is for Hogan Lovells, the law firm. So currently for them, we're building a graduate recruitment chatbot, which essentially creates the first intelligent assistance for graduate recruitment entry candidates to be able to interact with a law firm online 24/7. So this is, in all honesty, a relatively straightforward, simple, basic process in terms of what we're building. This is not super cutting edge. This is not exploratory. This is building a chatbot on a really sophisticated infrastructure software called Raza. And it's going to be a really cool intelligent assistant, but it's something that I think will be really creating a cool user experience for their incoming graduates. So that's kind of a sort of sexy front end part of the type of project that we're doing. But we've also done a lot of not so sexy kind of back end stuff, but that really actually makes a big difference for companies in terms of saving on resources, saving on time, cutting costs essentially. And so for Henkel, for example, the German manufacturer, we are in the process of building something that essentially automates their process around handling rejected invoices. So they have a lot of invoices that they sent out that have a form error, like just something sort of administrative in the background that has an error. And so they have invoices that are rejected. Those need to be sorted into the correct inboxes. They then need to be labeled properly and then handled and resolved. And so we're in the process of essentially building something that automates that from beginning to end. So we're essentially, at the moment, we're at stage two, which is building an intelligent overlay on their emails. But yeah, it's really helping them reduce costs and create a better user experience. I think what machine learning is really good for is that you are able to learn from historical data. And that's something that, of course, humans can do as well. We call it experience, right? Like, you've been on the job for a while, like, from experience what to expect. But this is just being able to train the algorithm to understand kind of what to make of incoming data and then give a better user experience as a result, whether that's to an external user, like an incoming graduate, or whether that's to an internal user, like an employee at Henkel. That's ultimately kind of what we want to do, is save people time and free up their time as well to do more meaningful stuff.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I've heard of examples like that in finance, and I wonder whether you come across the challenge that, this is what you're doing, you're automating tasks, you're removing jobs for people. You've heard it. You're smiling. You can read my mind. You're a psychologist.
I knew exactly what you were going to say. Actually, probably every conference I speak at, that's one of the main questions I get asked. Yeah.
But I think you've kind of already answered it, because people can do more meaningful tasks.
Yeah. So I think, and exactly, and there are different theories to this.
Yeah.
One theory is the white collar workers, they're not going to be replaced. It's the sort of blue collar work, like building automobiles, that's going to be replaced. Look at the factories. We've already replaced so many workers. That's the one end of the argument. The other end of the argument is actually no. It's the white collar workers who are more at risk. Specifically those that do jobs like, for example, a paralegal would, or a low-level lawyer who's just, essentially fact-checking across documents, or someone in finance who is basically just moving data from one spreadsheet to another or checking things. And, they have to do it because, otherwise there could be a mistake, and this is really important data. So it's, I think, those kind of tasks that we would... I'm going to say, use the un-PC word and say monkey task.
Spreadsheet jockeys, I think, is the one I was looking for. Can I say that? No, yeah, maybe.
What did you say?
Spreadsheet jockeys.
Spreadsheet jockeys. I've not heard that before, but that is also a good one. doing tasks that are boring and frustrating, if we're honest. And I think we'd all like to be spending our time doing more interesting things. We all have friends and colleagues and family who would like to spend their time doing more interesting things. And yeah, exactly as we said a minute ago, it's about freeing up our time to do those more interesting tasks. And I think what we're hopefully being able to free up time for is the human interaction. That's where businesses actually create value, right? It's in humans having a one-to-one or a one-to-many conversation and building relationships and building trust. And that is something that an AI will never be able to replace, in my opinion.
Yeah, correct. And I think that points to the future. So just finally, because I feel like we've got some more to talk about, but we'll leave that for another time. What sort of things are you excited about in the future? I mean, for me, I'm very interested in voice and voice first and voice interactions and voice search. And even now I use it in my car. I use, these sorts of things at home. And so how do you see that changing the future of work?
Yes, voice is a huge, huge topic. So one of our clients, Starbar, is a company based out of the US, and they are looking into voice for essentially ordering. And that could really change the game for so many industries, not just for the bar and restaurant space, but actually across, the entire of retail. I think for businesses to adapt voice in terms of a daily user-based perspective, we still have quite a bit to go because I think it's not yet so common for people to use voice in their daily commands. If we look at the actual statistics around the complexity and frequency of tasks that Alexa and Google Home, etc., are being used for, most of it is still around basically setting alarms, the weather, and playing a song. People are not yet using Alexa to perform anything more complex. People are barely using Alexa to order something online. It's sort of a vision that I think is not impossible, but it still requires some shift in trust and in accuracy of the software. And so for the users to switch, there's still a way to go. But I think if we have specific applications for specific uses, and we can show we can show that it works well for a certain type of task, and we can train users on it, then probably business is the first really exciting application for that, especially for something where maybe even for security or safety reasons, hands-free is better than having something in your hand. Like, for example, on a construction site, right? Or in an operating room or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to round up, Victoria, who would be the most relevant types of organizations that would be interested in talking to Springbok AI?
Sure. So we mostly work with enterprise clients. And really the key question that we help them solve and tackle is how can machine learning and data science help them make more data-driven decisions in the organization? And essentially, how can we help them solve some really difficult challenges that they've been working on?
Fantastic, fantastic. That's really helpful. And thanks for your time, Victoria. And people can get in touch with you how?
Probably best on victoria@springbok.ai.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening to this latest episode of the Digital Culture Change podcast. Please do like, comment, or share with your friends. And actually, why don't you subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on, so you can get the latest updates when they come out. Thanks for listening. Bye.